I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could offer me £5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Johnny Moe!
Rugby weekly.
Little reverse pass.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your Friday episode of the 42 Rugby Weekly. I hope you're having an absolutely smashing week. I can tell you one province that absolutely is, and that's Leinster. We're going to be chatting about Croke Park. One last time about Jordy Barrett, which we've gotten into in plenty of detail on our two subscription pods, Rugby Weekly Extra. You can go to the 42.ie/extra if you want to subscribe there. And we're going to look ahead as well to the other provinces' games and Leinster's in the ORC this weekend. It's been a mad week. It's going to be a mad weekend. And joining me to chat about all of that and more is Murray Kinsella of the 42. Murray, great to see you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm pretty blown away by the confirmation of the sellout already. Like, the season ticket holders in Leinster took up a big batch a little bit earlier. Then the general sale went on at 10 a.m. this morning, I think, and already gone. Northampton have taken up their allocation. Apparently there's loads of demand there. And that's part of it we can't forget. Like, they're on a cool journey as well as a club and have good support. But yeah, the demand is, it's heartening, I think, just as someone who covers the game. And I think it's just brilliant to see that Leinster fans, obviously predominantly for this one, but that demand is there in Irish rugby. 82,300. It's going to be unbelievable. Obviously, the history and going back there for the first time since 2009 is amazing. And I didn't know, actually, Gav. I was unsure how this was going to go. I genuinely was curious whether it would get close to capacity even. But like, someone's just texted me joking they should add a second date the night after due to popular demand. It's that big, so I think it's amazing news for Irish rugby as a whole, and particularly for Leinster, obviously.
When they announced that the Aviva was going to be a sellout for La Rochelle, on the one hand, that is impressive because of the quick turnaround, the fact that so many fans had already been at the same ground and forked out a bit of cash to do so against Leicester the week before. But at the same time, I was thinking, I would have been actually really disappointed if that game didn't sell out, given the stakes, given the opposition, given this is a province with a population of 3 million odd people, something in that region. I'm like, yeah, surely 50,000 people will show up. And that's not to take away from it, right? But it was just like, I would have been disappointed if it hadn't sold out. But I shared those sentiments you had towards Croke Park, which was, it's Northampton. They're a really fun team, but it doesn't feel like there is no animosity between these two teams compared to the La Rochelle thing, which is this ongoing saga. The fact that it's Croke Park is a novelty, sure, and that's bound to bring a few more people through the doors. But equally, you've had two home knockout games in quick succession. This next one is in 3 weeks' time. People aren't made of money either. So I was thinking, maybe if they breach like 60,000, more than the Aviva, that would feel like a massive success. But to sell it out in such a short space of time, I'm blown away by that. And I guess you mentioned it's heartening for Irish rugby. If you're a Leinster fan, what a day this is going to be, because the last time they played at Croke Park, the imagery from that day is iconic in the sense that it's almost squares of blue and red, but it's 50-50. You could argue there's maybe more Munster fans in the ground for that semi-final. This is going to be blue. This is going to be like a Dublin game. It's not even going to be that, because if Dublin were playing Kerry or whatever, you'll still have 25,000-30,000 Kerry fans there. This is going to be like woven into the tapestry of Leinster rugby forevermore, this day against Saints. It's going to look spectacular. It's going to sound spectacular. And like, again, yeah, just to swing back around, I'm stunned at how quickly it's happened. I wonder, has the speed caught you by surprise at all?
For sure. It really has. But it's fantastic. And the players who played in 2009 on the Leinster side, obviously a career highlight. And this is going to be, you'd imagine, similar for Leinster. And certainly they're not going to take that game for granted. They've left the frontliners at home from their tour of South Africa, most of the frontliners, the starting 15, to get ready and get set for that. And the exciting thing is that actually next season, they've obviously confirmed now, they're moving out of the RDS, it's getting redeveloped, and most of their home games are going to be in the Viva Stadium. But they also have access to Croke Park for a number of games. We don't know exactly that number, but like, imagine they get a big interprovincial clash in there again, and you have a crowd like this. It's really exciting prospect that this isn't just a one-off again. It's going to happen again next season, and it's an amazing stadium, and it's class with all the history of sports working together and eventually working together. I think that's a cool element to it as well. And yeah, I think a lot of people around the country will be surprised at how quickly this has happened as well. And it's great for Obi in that sense. It's going to make headlines and make news everywhere. And it definitely adds to Leinster's strong home advantage for the semi-final, Gaff.
As I say, it's been a busy and entertaining week for Leinster across the board. Their social media accounts, particularly their Twitter account, has become sentient in the last 48 hours or so. Marcus Obukla and his minions busy there fielding questions from fans about tickets for Croke Park. And I saw that they addressed one issue, which was that it had been reported previously that games might be moved to Nolan Park, for example, and that you would see Leinster spread out, not only in terms of training sessions and all of the efforts they've made there, but to actually play games in, let's call them, non-traditional rugby counties, with the greatest respect to Ian Dowling and a few others from Kilkenny, for example. But in the end, they can't do that. They made the point that to involve a third stadium and to kit it out basically for games, the operational costs involved in that, particularly off the back of the pandemic, would be unfeasible. So look, it's a business decision ultimately. Little bit disappointing, obviously, that they don't get the opportunity to do that. As exciting as Croke Park is, just like it would have been cool at the same time to see one in Nolan Park or somewhere like that.
Yeah, they in fairness, they've got out around the province. I know they've done that kind of tour and got training in a few different venues and tried to make sure they're connected to the entire province in that way. And that, I'm sure, will continue to be part of the strategy. But maybe further down the line, they'll look again at those venues for one-off games, because it is cool. It is something different. And, you know, we get so settled into our ways and going to the same venues all the time that freshening it up is a massive element. And there's probably a big part of that with Croker now as well, the excitement of marching on a new stadium and figuring out how you're going to get there, where you're going to have your pint before and after, and a different part of the city as well. And that's cool, a different part of the province, I should say. But yeah, it's all good for Leinster at the moment. It's a very good time to be a fan. I think there's a tiny bit of frustration amongst season ticket holders. Apparently when they go back to the RDS and it's redeveloped, they're not going to have the same spots they had before, and that'll be all changed up, and people have long standing traditions of sitting with the same people each time. So that's a bit of a frustration, but on the whole, the good times are, they're really rolling for Leinster fans at the moment.
If I sounded as though I wasn't enthusiastic to discuss the Geordie Barrett signing again, I apologize. Sometimes I forget that when we do this podcast, it might be your first time listening to us during the week. We've done two others, and it's obviously been dominating the Irish rugby discourse, not to mind, in Leinster over the last few days. And we've discussed it with Bernard Jackman. That was actually when it was still just a rumour on Monday morning before it was confirmed, and he gave his thoughts. And then we had James Tracy on, former Leinster and Ireland hooker as well, and he gave his perspective on it on Wednesday's pod for subscribers. Here's something that crops up, Murray, anytime Leinster make a signing that is deemed to be good nearly across the board, even though both James and Bernard had their reservations about Barrett signing. It's a conversation that we had when on this podcast when Munster signed Jason Jenkins, which is 3 years ago now, just over 3 years ago.
Comes up every year.
At the time, you made the point that you felt as though it was not the right move for Munster, because the reality was, if Jason Jenkins was starting, it would mean that the likes of Thomas Ahern, and you really specified Ahern as being a generational talent, would not get sufficient game time to your mind, and that Munster at the time were turning too often to South Africa under Johan van Graan to fix problems at a time when infrastructurally the province wasn't as sound as it is now. At the time, you had one Limerick player in their academy, for example, and the vibe around Munster was very different back then as well. So here's a question from one of our listeners. Well, it's more a request, really. Can you address if Murray thinks it's morally wrong that Leinster have signed Geordie Barrett like he did when Munster signed Jason Jenkins on the podcast? And this listener uses a pseudonym on Twitter, so I'll err on the side of caution and not name them. They were polite about it. They added, just to say, I really like your podcast, but it just needs to be addressed considering how it looks. So I told him, firstly, you never use the word morally. But I also told him you can speak for yourself. So have at it.
I mean, I was surprised if I had said Marley. So I'm glad I didn't actually say that. I haven't listened back to that since. But I was a bit worked up that day in hindsight. I suppose they're two very different signings, aren't they? If they're trying to draw a comparison there. Like Geordie Barrett, what, 57, nearly 60 caps for the All Blacks. Probably one of the best players active at the moment in the game, I would say. And really playing at an exceptional level. Like Jason Jenkins, as I said at the time, a good player, and certainly made the Munster squad better. I think I did stress that at the time, but probably not in that calibre quite, is he? Like, one cap for the Springboks, very good player, but not a world-class talent. So I struggle to probably see those in the same way. I would more compare, as I said on Wednesday actually, I would more compare Barrett signing with D'Alende and Snyman coming to Munster. And I mean, I haven't looked back, but I can, from what I remember, I think I did laud those signings at the time. I think I called them potential game changers, maybe. Probably said they're world class. Probably a lot of the stuff that I've said about Jordy Barrett. So I guess that's a better comparison, really. So I don't think the Jenkins one is that relevant to Barrett, really. And when I think back to it, in fairness, Tom Ahern, in hindsight, probably needed a bit more developmental time and the increased physicality that he added to his game with a couple extra years helped. But in hindsight as well, like, Munster did already have an NIQ lock at the time with Snyman, who was coming back from injury, but he was still on the squad. CJ Sander had just announced he was retiring, and that's how they got the Jenkins signing over the board. I think at the time, didn't they say maybe he would play six a bit, which I think we all knew at the time wasn't really the case. It was another lock coming in. So that was my frustration as well, is that you already had one NIQ lock there. You had a second. You had Tom Ahern and Finian Witcherly, as far as I can remember, trying to break through. So there were a number of different circumstances, I would say, in that case. Like, Jenkins to me is not comparable at all to Jordy Barrett, whereas Snyman and D'Alende are exactly the same kind of transfer. So I think that's a pretty tenuous comparison, if I'm being honest, and I'm glad I didn't say morally wrong.
That's something that's been ascribed to it, because people have raised it, for example, when Leinster signed RJ Snyman. Again, this Jenkins little snippet of conversation we had 3 years ago.
And the other thing is, like, Snyman and Jordy Barrett they're replacing existing NIQ slots. Actually, one of them being Jenkins in the Leinster squad. And again, as I said at the time, I think when Jenkins moved to Leinster and this came up, like, Leinster's track record of producing players for Ireland, the national team, and indeed for other provinces a little bit, is, you just can't argue with it. So I think that probably fed into my sense that Jenkins deal was not the right one at that time. And that was nothing against him. I hope it never came across that way. Like, I do think he's a fine player, and I'm pretty certain I said that at the time, both Munster and Leinster signings. But I just felt with the Munster one, it was just a step too far, given all those circumstances that I've mentioned there. And you even said earlier on, it was a very different time in the province. Like, I don't think I could have been more praising of what Munster have done since with their young players, and that's been really heartening to me. Even that, from what I understand, the private investment that went on Snyman, that's not going to go on a player now per se, but some private investment is actually going on their pathways, Munster's pathways. So they're sinking that money into their own, some of that money into their own development pathways, and I think they're doing brilliant work in that regard. So I hope Munster fans are still frustrated with my comments at the time, but I get it if they are there, and people are entitled to have a different opinion to mine. But now, Jordy Barrett's on a different scale of signing, I would suggest.
I think I saw people cite this Jenkins chat we had when, say, Ross Maloney's move was confirmed to Bath, because Leinster have signed Snyman, and the knock-on effect to that.
To replace Jenkins, though, too. Snyman's replacing Jenkins, not Ross Maloney.
Sure, yeah. But I guess
Joe McCarthy has replaced Ross Maloney, essentially, if you know what I mean. Joe McCarthy wasn't where he is in the pecking order, and now he is. And I don't think that's a fair line to draw. Like, Jenkins was there as their NIQ lock. He's going, and Snyman's coming in.
Well, the point I was going to make...
And Ross Maloney's 30, is he?
Exactly, right? So this is the point I was going to make. There's a huge distinction, I would say, between that situation and like, whatever way you frame it, Maloney's game time next season being limited to the point that he feels he'd be better off leaving, and Thomas Ahern back in 2021. Thomas Ahern back then, and it remains the case, had a potential Ireland career in him. He looks like one of the best players to come through at Munster in recent years. Ross Maloney's an excellent player, like, unbelievably popular with Leinster fans. The Ireland thing isn't going to happen for him. I would argue at that point, there's nothing wrong with losing homegrown talent. Like, in the bigger picture, it might be unfortunate for him. Maybe he's really excited to move to Bath. I just mean that if they don't really have a test future. At that point, the natural order of things, try and bring in players who either do or bring in an NIQ player who will elevate you. Ahern had that potential at the time. That's where I think it's different. And like, when you make the point that this Jordy Barrett signing is more like the Snyman signing for Munster and D'Alende as well, like if you think back to Munster's squad at that time, competing with Snyman at lock would have been Billy Holland, whose Ireland career was pretty much finished at that point. Finian Wycherley, who was kind of in the mix just about, but very much on the fringes. Like, D'Alende was probably preventing game time for Dan Goggin and Rory Scannell, both good players again, but who weren't going to play for Ireland, right? And like, that's where to me, like, they're to sign guys like that, like elite world-class players, if they're way better than the players you have in those positions, like, that's absolutely fine. The Jenkins one, when Munster signed him, I'm fucking wrapping myself in riddles here. When Munster signed him, he didn't feel like a huge upgrade on Thomas Ahern, who we felt and we still feel would have an Ireland career in him.
Well, there are different types of second row. In fairness, Munster had Sean Klein, who was an Ireland international at that time. Byrne was there, Luce Headlock, a different player to Jenkins. But you already had Snyman, who was essentially a tight end, or Luce Headlock. So you kind of had that profile of NIQ player there. Snyman did get back from injury that season, but unfortunately got injured again. So him and Jenkins, as it turned out, never played together. And unfortunately, Jenkins was injured a lot. But yeah, it is a long time ago now, and I'm sure at this stage people are listening to this going, what the hell are you even on about at this stage?
Yeah, very true. Murray, I know you've been getting a lot of correspondence in general about things like central contracts. Have at it there. What have we been hearing? What have you been hearing?
Yeah, an unbelievable mailbag. And this, the quality of feedback we get and suggestions we get is always really high. I have to say, a lot of long emails that you kind of have to work through, but the thesis in some of them is excellent. And a lot of it is around central contracting. People really seem to be absorbed and fascinated by this subject. I think we did a pod, is it a year ago maybe? And we got loads of feedback. And I actually have some of the stuff still here that I meant to bring up next time we came around to it. So I'll mention some of that as well. But quite a few people with suggestions of what the RFU could do. And actually, I think two in particular, I've kind of figured out what the IRFU actually might do. And we spoke about it on Wednesday that a major overhaul of the contracting system is highly unlikely, given lads are just in the process of having signed central contracts going on to. But it sounds like there might actually be a tweak as early as next season, potentially. And I think it all has to be signed off on. But let me read the suggestions first. Damien Crean was on, and he says, what are your views on a system where the province benefiting from the central contract pays a flat fee of, say, 100k? The benefit of this would that, when you have a frontline established international, you still pay a fair amount for it. So then by pooling the flat fees of all the provinces paying those central contract fees, you end up with a pool of money, and that gets redistributed around all the provinces. So that while the province who's produced the central contract is still benefiting, obviously, by not paying the entire contract, they're contributing a bit that allows the others to try and keep pace. And I thought that was really clever from Damien. Tommy O'Holohan was on, and he had a similar idea based on the NBA's collective bargaining agreement, which I wasn't familiar with. He calls it a luxury tax, where if a player in Leinster, say, signs a central contract for 500k per year, then the RFU could retract the same value from the amount it provides to the province's provincial contracting fund, and then split that equally amongst the four provinces again. So same idea from Tommy as well. And from what I understand, that actually is potentially, again, it has to be signed off, I think, the RFU are going to do from next season, that the province who has a central contracted player contributes a small fee, or they haven't figured that out, I don't think, and the RFU then essentially redistributes that amongst the other provinces so that they can try and keep pace. And that seems like a very sensible tweak, really, doesn't it? Simple, but sensible. And the province with the centrally contracted player are still going to benefit financially and have wiggle room to do things like sign an NIQ player if that's what they want to do, or put it into a pathway. But the other provinces don't completely lag behind if say, Leinster, for example, have 10 central contracted players. So it sounds to me like a sensible tweak. And One thing I'd forgotten, to be honest, I should have gone back to my notes, is that last May, Kevin Potts, the CEO of the RFU, he actually confirmed publicly that they were going to do, or they were in the process of doing, an independent review of their whole financial model. He's on the record as saying the whole model would be reviewed and they'll see what comes of it. And obviously the provinces feed into that. The provinces are part of the RFU. The RFU is made up of the provinces and they've all contributed towards this. Now it sounds like there still are concerns about the gap opening between Leinster and the rest, even further than it may be. But that seems like the solution they've come up with for the short term. Not an overhaul of the whole thing and get rid of the central contracts, but that tweak that two of our very astute listeners and maybe others have come up with themselves, Gav. So yeah, I'd be interested to see what people think of that tweak in the short term.
So in a situation in which Leinster had 10 central contracts, which they should shortly when Jameson Gibson Park signs one, 100 grand per central contract.
No value confirmed. That was Damien's suggestion. Yeah. So my understanding is they actually haven't figured that out yet, but that was the example from Damien. So yeah, if there was 10 of them on 100K, you get your million, you reached you. And that doesn't sound like a lot in that example, but it may be more. And even at that, it probably won't be a huge sum either. It won't be enough of a sum for the other provinces to suddenly catch up and have a similar budget. And maybe that's where some of the concern in the three other provinces lies. We got another message actually from Kieran Parker. He said James Tracy actually bringing a great fresh voice to things, but he actually asked, is there a case for the RFU reviewing the whole provincial financial system, which has happened now? He suggests that the elephant in the room seems to be the school system in Leinster. He says, if it's accepted that the majority of players coming into Leinster Academy come from private school system, then effectively these private schools are saving the RFU / Leinster having to heavily invest otherwise. And he said, you know, there's a question in here. Has the question been asked as to how much the private schools are saving the RFU provinces? And like, if you think about what those schools, the bigger schools, spend on their rugby programs, you're talking in the millions combined that the RFU or Leinster themselves don't have to spend. And they do, of course, still spend money on getting them into, say, Leinster 18s camps or camps before that with the best players and honing their skills and coaching the coaches in some of those schools and that. But Kieran suggests that, you know, Leinster can otherwise, and the RFU can otherwise, spend more money than they would have had to in those schools elsewhere, say in their club system now, which you're seeing guys come through as well more. So I thought that was a good point from Kieran. And my sense from the other provinces is that is a concern for him, is that school system is such a big advantage because it just keeps churning out players now year on year, and there's such money being sunk into it that's nothing to do with the rugby system in Ireland, that advantage should be maybe factored in more when the RFU are figuring out how they finance the game. Like, it's just there for Leinster, and no one's trying to blame Leinster that it's in their province, the Leinster school system, and it's that strength and that breadth of schools. But there seems to be a sense that maybe the RFU could adjust a little bit and, I suppose, in short, put more money into the other provinces to account for that advantage that Leinster have, which seems kind of, a Leinster fan might be that's totally unfair, but I get where the thinking's coming from. They're trying to figure out how the hell do we adjust for this, because we're never going to have a school system like that. And because it's at such a high level now, does that just keep giving Leinster an even bigger leg up as the years pass?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. Like, your first task would be to calculate roughly how much it does save them. And then I actually don't think that would be especially difficult if schools were, they don't need to be transparent as in publicly, they just need to...
they could tell them to do one, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, well,
nothing
actually,
to do with the RFU.
But it could be, you know, like, taking that into account, if the RFU were to take that into account in their application of say, budgets or other provinces' control over their own budgets, even, like, it may be as simple as just allowing the other provinces to have like an additional NIQ slot, something like that. Like, just loosen it a little bit where they can make up a little bit of the gap without those natural advantages that Leinster have. Like we spoke about it on a Wednesday, it's a socioeconomic reality of the country. The East Coast, Dublin, is where most of the money is. It's where most of the population is. There are way more kids there. There's more need for schools. And you could, whether or not there's more need for private schools, they exist, you know, and they're always going to exist where there is money. Like, it's a fascinating one, isn't it?
And the other part is that as Leinster now, say, sell out the Aviva last weekend, there's another, around a million probably going into their coffers. And as you say, commercial possibilities are all the greater with a big population there. And the other three provinces, like they're turning in deficits some years, or maybe they're struggling to break even. And Leinster, it seems, probably have, they're just in a better situation financially that way. So there are a few you have to consider that as well. Like, you're trying to make sure the other provinces get to the maximum potential they can, but you have to be prudent financially, don't you? Like, the COVID showed, even though the RFU still have great cash reserves there, COVID showed, like, if another COVID happened, like, Irish rugby, I mean, all rugby, actually, rugby as a professional sport is already, on shaky ground, but they have to be kind of prudent in that regard. And they have, but at the same time, they have to make sure that those, and I think it is already happening, and Munster's a great example of how the pathway is improving, but it might take 3 to 5 years to really see the benefits of that. And I think Munster are right to have their focus in that direction now. It seems to be the whole philosophy in the province. When you talk to someone, it's like, we're going homegrown, and this is the core of the squad that's going to come through, and there's even better talent, and they're coaching the coach as well, and that's the way to do it. But whether that's enough to be challenging for Champions Cups in the next couple of years, who knows? It's very complex. It's very, the more you dig into it, the more kind of multi-layered it becomes, and it's not to say the model is perfect or even right. We had one email back when we did the first pod from Theo O'Donnell, whose central question was, why have central contracts in the first place? It's one I've kind of grappled with. He kind of comes down, it boils down to, listen, a much cleaner solution is just have everyone on a provincial contract, and the RFU top up the best national players, which is something actually I kind of did touch on Wednesday. He said, no one is saying the quiet part of it. The real reason the central contract exists is because the RFU doesn't trust the provinces to handle contract negotiations and retention of the most important talents in the country. It's just a way for New Sephora or whoever has direct influence on the process, but it makes a mess of it, was his take on things. That was Theo O'Donnell. So yeah, loads of different opinions on how it could or should be done, but the RFU, as it turns out, have already had this whole review and this whole discussion, and they have acknowledged by making a admittedly small tweak for now that it hasn't been perfect, or isn't perfect as it is. The central contracts have definitely helped Ireland, I think, get to where they are. And the bit that's probably missed is that the RFU do this because they want to try and incentivize the provinces to really produce homegrown players. They want to say, like, this has been the reward on offer, that you'll have this much more space in your budget. But as I've just said, that it can take years to get a player to that level, and someone who you think might reach it may not, through misfortune with injury or just they max out their potential. So it is a very complex beast, Gavin. My head is kind of fried, to be honest, after a week of looking at it and talking about it.
Well, you heard me there trying to make sense of my own point as I was talking about Snyman and Neil Enda and Jenkins. I may be leaving a note for the producer on that one, but yeah, it's been a long old week and a fascinating one nonetheless. And it continues with actual on-field rugby action. Ulster at home to Cardiff in the ORC tonight, where, given that this podcast is going out pretty late on a Friday, we'll swing back around to that one for subscribers on Monday's Rugby Weekly Extra. But then you have Connacht at home to Zebra, first start for Matthew Devine. What else is going on? Finlay Beelam earning his 200 cap. And Shane Jennings, a fullback, actually is an interesting prospect for Connacht fans. And hey, this is actually a must-win game for Connacht against a pretty decent team. So what do you make of that game, and what do you make of that Connacht selection by Pete Wilkins?
Huge couple of weeks for them. They've got to take, I think, maximum points from this and the Dragons game and be really ruthless and put back-to-back performances together against opposition you'd expect them to do so. I'm really excited by Matthew Devine. I've kind of been waiting for him to get that chance to kick on. He's, you know, he's a little kind of throwback maybe in terms of scrum half play. He's smaller in stature, but really sharp and smart, and with a real injection of acceleration close to the breakdown. So that's exciting. I think it's class for Finlay Beelam to get to 200. What a servant and what an inspired pickup he was, you know, coming across from Australia at a young age. He lived in a house with no heating for his first winter in Ireland. He said it was truly miserable and he wondered what he was doing. But it's worked out really, really well for him. Really important player for Ireland as well these days. And 200 caps is a marker of just how much he's meant to the province. So I think they're under pressure to really produce. You'd expect them absolutely to win, but I think having a polished performance is key to them kind of continuing that next weekend against Dragons and giving themselves a leg up before they go into that kind of tough last three games.
That is the Saturday night game, and Leinster and Munster are both in action in South Africa before that. So Leinster take on the Lions in Johannesburg, Ellis Park, 2:00. And compared to past Leinster tours of South Africa, at least last year's one off the top of my head anyway, it's a stronger team, probably just a stronger travelling party. You have a lot of senior players in there. Kieran Fawley, for example, starting at fullback to name but one. Keane Healy as well to name two. But Dermot Mangan equally making his first start. So it's a little bit of a blend of experience and inexperience for a tricky enough test away to the Lions for Leinster.
It is a stronger team than maybe I initially thought they might send over. And based on last year's tour where they did have a great win against the Lions, but then they got a kind of humbling at the hands of, or a very harsh lesson for an inexperienced team at the hands of the Bulls. And they'll play the Stormers next weekend. It'll be interesting to see, maybe some of these guys might go back, because there's quite a few of them who are going to be involved against Northampton. I mean, Frawley started, Jenkins started last weekend, and they going back up. A couple of guys like Harry Byrne and McGrath and Keane Healy, who you'd imagine will be in the 23 against Saints as well. So it is a nice blend. Natai back, I think, is really important. This is the kind of occasion you have had him there for, to lend his nous and physicality indeed. And I'm excited by Mangan as well. You're so right to mention him. Was really good with the 20s and seems to have added a nice few slabs of muscle onto his frame as well. He's a big unit with a lot of power. So yeah, it's probably ended up maybe taking some, not that it's a completely full strength Leinster team, but it is a strong Leinster team. Points to their depth again. You've got a number of international guys there. And yeah, I think it's kind of heartening for a Leinster fan who kind of maybe worried about going to South Africa and needing points as well, because the Bulls and Glasgow second and Bulls in third are kind of breathing down their necks. And even though you still expect, and it's in their own hands, Leinster to get that top spot, it's not a done deal yet.
No, particularly with Stormers away next week at DHL Stadium. That's, depending on the team that Leinster pick, that's a kind of a 50-50 game, maybe even a 60-40 game for the Stormers. You kind of have to win this one. Just keep the Wolves from your door, so to speak, in the table. Munster have, on paper, a trickier test. Let's be honest about it. They're on the high veld against the Bulls. The Bulls rested up in the Champions Cup in order to prepare themselves for this game, and they're running. They are desperate for a home run in the URC knockouts. There's actually a brilliant column written by Jake White on Rugby Pass, which Bernard Jackman shared on Twitter. I retweeted it as well. It's worth a read. Just White contextualizing why he made the selection decisions he did for that Champions Cup game at Northampton and his views on the rugby schedule as a whole. Some really fascinating insights there. But they are at pretty much full tilt now against Munster, who equally are welcoming back some big guns. You've got Calvin Nash, Shane Daly, Jorge Snyman all start, having missed out with injury and illness the last day against Saints. Conor Murray starts, actually, Murray, which is an interesting call in that Craig Casey seems to be fit. And Graham Rowntree has gone with a 6-2 split with Joey Carberry, I guess, covering fullback conceivably. Jack Crowley can go in at 12, so you've two out halves in that split, but two pretty versatile out halves at that. What do you make of Munster's lineup to begin with?
I think six on the bench is a good call, because it'll be a tough day for the heavies at altitude of nearly 30 degrees. It looks like it's going to be sweltering and physically extremely demanding, and the Bulls, we know, are going to be fresh, and they're an excellent team when they're in the mood. A lot of teams have had really difficult days in Loftus, and I think it's brilliant for Munster to get those guys back from injury to have that first strength, you know, first choice look to the team, to have Snyman in there, to have the two wings as well, because Nash, they kind of miss Nash's physicality as much as anything. He gives you a real punch, even though he's a winger and you don't associate that with wings. To have his sheer aggression into the carry, I think is really important. So yeah, I think it's probably the tie of the weekend, and it is crucial. Like all the provinces are in a race. I know Munster are coming into this fourth, and they'll feel that they have the fixture list to grab a home quarter final at least. But they have to be eyeing top two. Like you have to do your absolute utmost to get as much home advantage as you can in knockouts. Even if they disproved that last season, it would just make it an easier ride this time around. So I'm encouraged for them that they've got guys back. Even Ollie Yeager on the bench, I think that's brilliant. He's made a good start to life in Ireland, and it gives their 23 just a much better gloss. And yeah, I won't go back to it, but maybe if someone had been in Northampton, you never know.
Ulster against Cardiff, as I say, we'll review that game on Monday, but just give us a prediction. We'll start there with that game. A must-win game as well for Ulster, really, Mur.
Cardiff, they're hard to shake off. I was down in Thomond Park when they played Munster, and they just never go away. They've got jackal threats, and they defend well, and they just seem to have this real ability to cling on to teams and loads of losing bonus points, but they have been losing bonus points. And I think Ulster, who are themselves, you know, they're fighting for top eight. They really are. It's so bunched for that top eight kind of berth. So I think with that need, that bit of desperation, they'll edge it at home.
Lions, Leinster?
I think Leinster will win. I think it's a good Leinster team out. Lions, it probably will be high scoring again. Lions tend to play some lovely rugby, but I'll opt for Leinster there.
Bulls, Munster in Pretoria.
Say Bulls at home. They're an impressive beast up in Loftus.
And finally, Connacht, Zebra should be a home win.
Yeah, it has to be. Surely Connacht. I know you never know what you're exactly going to get with Connacht, but surely we know this weekend.
Yeah, it'll be a tricky podcast if Connacht botched that on Monday, I have to say. I'm sick of having to talk about them through the prism of, what do you say about that? Here's hoping that the province doesn't get a clean sweep. We'll see how it goes over the weekend. But for now, Mara, I'll leave you go. Thanks a million for all of that. Catch you Monday.
Yeah, and thanks to everyone again for getting in touch. Alan Scarlett was another one who sent on a very kind of detailed and good suggestion for central contracting, which I didn't get to. But as always, I'm kind of blown away by the thought and time people take to send this stuff to us. So apologies if we don't always get to everything, but it's appreciated and it's read. And yeah, it's top class stuff.
Yeah. No, we have very good listeners, to be fair. It can be a little bit mawkish maybe when we're like, oh, they're really switched on, but they genuinely are. They genuinely are.
More sometimes, so than us.
Sometimes I read the emails and I'm like, shit, how did I not think of that? Or
every day.
Thanks everyone. We'll catch you on Monday. 42.ie/extra if you want to join us there for Rugby Weekly Extra twice a week. If not, we'll be back again next Friday in this stock. Take care.
But the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Driver's got names of the two double barrels. He spits out.